team of the modern era.
This is AFL Exchange on afl.com.au.
From the studios of AFL Media in Docklands in Melbourne to MP3 players around the world, hello everyone and welcome to AFL Exchange. How's that for a new intro?
Yeah, that's new.
Matt Thompson, Drew Petrie is here. Hello,
yeah,
Drew.
Good to be here again, Matt. That's very fresh.
Yeah,
and
that's what
we need this time of year, because you get in a rut in the middle part of this year, of the season usually, but it's nice to freshen things up, and you did that.
Thank you. Drew Lowther is here from the AFL.com.au news desk. Hello, mate.
Hello, Matt. It's good to see you. Good to see you, Drew Petrie. How was the weekend off?
Yeah, it was good. Winning is fixes everything, so I was a little nervous in that first half on Friday night when Essendon were playing some good footy and stretched it out to a four-goal lead at one stage there, and a bit nervous, but once the boys got the game on their terms in the third quarter, I rested easy.
And some time in the coach's box as well, which you'll talk about later on, which
yes.
I'm very, very interested to hear. Matt Thompson, I imagine you watched the game of footy. If anyone in football didn't realise how desperately North Melbourne need our man playing up forward, they realised it on Friday night. Would you agree?
Yeah, they could have done with you, Drew, but having said that, they did it without you. So that must be reassuring.
It is. Absolutely it is. And I think for the game earlier against Geelong, the week earlier, when Brent Harvey started as a sub, we got it done with him only coming on in the third quarter as well. So it's great. It's great that the boys are getting it done with a couple of us old blokes sort of not being out there.
Does it hurt contract negotiations, though?
No, I wouldn't think so. Not at all. No, not at all. I haven't got a job yet, Matt. I don't think I've ever gone this long into season without having the following season sewn up. But they're making me work and earn my next contract.
Well, does that concern you at all?
No, not at all. No,
does it surprise you? Did you think it would take this long?
No, it doesn't surprise me. No, I'm sure that when most 32-year-olds are made to work right up until late in the season to get that contract, should the club feel you deserve another one.
Boomers 400th this weekend. I know that you've got plenty of great memories, but
yeah.
I'm a little bit confused. Some of the talk coming, particularly from the coach, he did a press conference on Wednesday. It doesn't seem that it's a fait accompli that Boomer will play next year. I thought it would be. Is the language trying to take the pressure off Brent, do you think, from the coach, or do you think it's right up in the air?
Well, I don't think Brent's gone this far into a season without being contracted either. So even for the last 5 one-year contracts that he's received from the footy club, though, that would have been well and truly done by now. So this year is a lot different. The fact that, again, we beat Geelong on Saturday night a couple of weeks back without him there may throw a question in the air as well that we can win without him. But
modern footy's a bit more than just winning one game when a guy only plays a half or doesn't play at all, surely.
Yeah.
I mean, his presence around the football club, his leadership, and what he does on the field has got to all come into it.
Yeah, there's so many factors that come into it. Over the next 2 years, North's list is going to change a lot given how old we are at the moment. They say that this year's draft is one of the worst in, I don't know, 10 years. So there might not be as many players to get from that pool of talent. All those things weighed up. Him taking up one spot on your list, even if you're not sure about it, wouldn't you just put him on again? That's what I'm thinking. Like, put him on again because of the things I've just said as well.
But isn't it justifiable from Brad's perspective and from the list management committee's perspective and from the broader club's perspective, when you're sitting 10th on the ladder, 8 and 7, that they're not going to rush to making any of these decisions when they don't need to?
Exactly. And I'm comfortable with that, and I understand that that's the case. If we were sitting second or third on the ladder, then you'd probably sew him up and a couple others as well. But yeah, for sure, we're not in a super position at the moment, and finals aren't guaranteed. And if we don't make finals, then the club's going to have to make some probably pretty hard decisions.
That's why I'm confused about this call, though, Matt, because it's not as if Brent Harvey's form is the reason that North Melbourne are sitting mid-table. I mean, he's been very, very good in a lot of matches. I'm sure at his age there are things that he's not doing as well as he used to. I'm sure that there's things that coaches understand that we don't. But gee, I'd hardly put the blame on him.
But there's pressure on Brad too. I mean, how much does that come into this whole conversation?
Well, this is why I think you would be putting pressure on guys who aren't performing. I think Brent Harvey's performed pretty well throughout the season. He's a vital cog in that team.
Brad's
surely
been pretty consistent with his language, though, hasn't he, throughout all of this? It's not like he's been up and down on it.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. I'm a bit surprised by it, because I would have thought that, and he's obviously saying he knows far better than I do, but I just would have thought that, yeah, he's played well enough, he deserves another contract.
Do you know what I think was a rubbish argument? The argument that he should play on because he needs to break Michael Tuck's record. I'm sorry. That's not a reason.
Where was that argument coming from?
That's
point
been sprouted
made
on a few different talkback radio
by
shows.
Who?
I think it's just
names?
Some
name and shame.
No, I won't do that. But I think it's just some.
True.
Some,
yeah. Given your age, given Harms' age as well, this serious question.
Yep.
How do you think they might be weighing that? Is it one or the other, or given that you're a key position,
yeah,
he's not? Does that concern you at all? I mean, that would put obviously both of you in a pretty horrible position.
Yeah. No, I'm fully aware of that, and I think the club is thinking about that. Again, there's going to be a lot of blokes in the next 2 years that retire and finish up, given our ages. The club probably wants to stagger that process and not have a mass exodus all in one go. So, they've got to weigh that up because Brent and I both want to play on, both feel as though we should play on.
Yep.
Beyond 2016 is an unknown. So,
would you stay one club player if you got the tap on the shoulder?
If I got the tap on the shoulder, yeah. Yeah, you'd probably tempted.
That's it from me, Matty, because we know he's been getting angrier this year.
I was almost going to say that was a brave question to ask, yeah, that last one.
No, I would.
It's a terrible thing.
I feel as
though
I can play on next year regardless,
yep,
but is it worth going somewhere for one more year just because you think you can? Well, probably not.
Just for 400 grand.
Yeah, well, that's
it. You're going to take a haircut, Drew. He wouldn't play for 400, right?
Get on with it.
Someone might offer just as a bit of a cheapie.
What about
the steak knives?
Memories of
I've
Boomer.
Got plenty of good memories.
Oh, you
of
do.
Boomer.
What about everyone just says he's a tight ass? Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah.
Like, that's just the general perception of him.
But I know him. I know him really well.
Does he get in a shout with you in the office?
Yeah, absolutely he does. Yeah, he absolutely does. And I just think Brent's he's worked hard for every dollar he's earned. His family's worked hard for every dollar they've earned, and just because now he's got really deep pockets doesn't mean he has to change his principles. So that's what I see. He's a very. I lived with Brent for the first. Sorry, I lived with the family for the first 15 months that I was in Melbourne, and then lived with Brent for 2 years. And to live with him at that point, he'd played 100 games, won a flag, won an EJ Witten medal, and then I moved in and shared the house with him was really good to see just how professional he was back then, how much he loved his footy, how competitive he was. It was a great way to learn, and he certainly helped me get to where I am today.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, and that's looking back now, mm-hmm, as everyone's so reflective, you must look back at that and think, that was a pretty cool time.
Yeah, it was. Oh, it was. And we used to go out a lot because you could back then, and we had plenty of fun along the way. And Brent's house, where it was a bit of a halfway house. A lot of the boys would call in on the way to training and stop past for dinner on the way home from training. So those 2 years that I lived with him they're two of the best years of my life.
Who did the cooking?
We shared the cooking. We both kept it simple. It was sort of meat and three veg kind of guys. And then we'd have cooks and pasta up the night before the footy game. We're both really, really tidy. He was extremely tidy, and I was as well. So we kept a really tidy house. You know, I did the vacuuming, but we did the dishes. And about once a month he'd have to, he'd do the gardening. So he'd have to mow the lawns, and he had these big pittosporums, the big hedging trees, and he'd have to get me to come out and cut the really high bits because he couldn't reach. So I'd be sitting inside, and then he'd come and said, "Oh, Drewy, can you come out and do the high bits? I can't reach them." Even standing on a ladder, he couldn't reach these high bits of the tree. So.
You mentioned his professionalism. Is it a fluke that he's got this far, or is it hard work?
Hard work. There's no magic formula. I think that the first few years of Brent's career would have been doing pre-seasons under Dennis Pagan, just ruthless pre-seasons with lots of running and minimal physio, minimal massage. There were no ice bars and things back then. So I reckon Brent's body become hardened and really resilient in those first few pre-seasons. And to this day, he still does all training. He still has minimal massage, minimal physiotherapy sessions because his body was really hardened in those initial years.
I find it quite refreshing that he comes out honestly and answers the question, "No, I don't think anyone is going to join us in the 400 club." Do you agree with
him? Yeah. No, well, I do. I think it'll be hard for players to make 300 games in the next 10 to 20 years. Yes, the rigours of the game, the pace and all that, and the injuries, but then you're also seeing a little bit of the mental fatigue that players are experiencing with what Chris Scott said about Joel Selwood a few weeks back, and what Joe Watson maybe he's struggling with at the moment, given what Mark Thompson had to say.
I want to tap into his competitiveness that you mentioned as well. Any good stories to share there, Drew?
Yeah, this one's from a couple of weeks ago when we do a goal kicking competition after the captain's run, which is the last session of the week. So we have seven spots that we have shots from, and then we go and do a few more. So after we'd had these seven shots this day, Brent had finished last and I was second last. And it wasn't until the next morning, we must have travelled interstate, that he came up to me and said, no, I wasn't last yesterday because you missed that shot, remember? And I got that one, so you were last and I was second last. So this is a goal. This is a seven-shot goal-kicking competition the day before the game, which has nothing bearing on it. And he came up to me the next morning. So he's probably thought about this for about 12 hours about, hang on, no, I didn't lose this game. I came second last, not last, because he always wins. And any time he loses his goal-kicking comp, we always hang it on him because he never, ever loses. He's that good in front of goal. So I guess that's just an instance of something so trivial that he just couldn't accept losing. He wanted to be second last, not last, in something that didn't matter at all. So, that sums him up.
He was pretty happy when he won that raffle as well.
Yeah, absolutely he was. Was that him or Spider?
Is that Harley Davidson?
How much influence does he still have over the group?
Yeah, a lot. Yeah, he's still... you can see the young players who play his similar position are always asking him to sit down with them and to look at the vision. There's a lot of the VFL guys who play in the VFL each week, ask Brent to sit down and watch their edits, their clips of the week with him. His people still gravitate towards him. People always watching how hard he trains and still look to him for advice and still look to him to lead the way.
Is he a sledger?
A little bit. I think he's got to be, doesn't he? He gets bashed. He got tagged on Friday night. Essendon tagged him in his 399th game. So I think he's learned a bit to give a bit of lip.
Can you remember any?
I can't, to be honest. Oh, yeah, you put me on the spot there. There's nothing that comes straight to mind from Brent. Maybe later in the show, if I remember something, sure, I'll bring it up.
It's a great achievement, and congratulations to Brent Harvey on Game 400 happening in Brisbane this weekend. We'll talk more about that match coming up on AFL Exchange. Lots to talk about, though, as we lead up to Round 17. Lots of talking points kicking around the footy world. We want to talk a bit about Kurt Tipper. We'll get to him in a moment. First, Patrick Dangerfield. Is he worth all the fuss? We've had 3 days of almost rolling coverage of Paul Connor's arrival in Adelaide, the manager having dinner with him last night, and then Patrick with his regular radio appearance this morning, which seemed bigger than Ben Hur, really, and the coverage that's getting, and everyone's talking about it. There was even someone who went to the trouble, some punter went to the trouble on Facebook and went and found an old post that AFL.com.au had put up from about 3 years ago when he last signed his contract. It said, breaking, Patrick Dangerfield signs 3-year deal. Someone's gone back and put that out and it's gone viral.
Oh,
and
right,
everyone's been tricked thinking that he's signed, but it's actually a link to an article
that's
from
clever.
3 years ago.
How do people know that Paul Connors was going to Adelaide?
Well, he was spotted by news cameras at the airport.
But that was reported as well before he got there, wasn't it? How did they find that stuff out? Did they leak that to get...
This is interesting. There is some talk, and people are just thinking back to Chris Judd's move from West Coast, and Paul Connors obviously was the man behind that too. And this is just a theory. I haven't spoken to Paul about this, but there's just this theory that, maybe they're just leaking, giving the media a sniff of the story around Round 17. Perhaps, I don't know, switch the momentum in their favour as a kind of negotiating tool, potentially either with the Cats or with the Crows, who knows? There's always that third option of Collingwood that remains, and Collingwood's pretty adamant that they've got room in their cap for Dangerfield. Then there's the question as well as to whether or not Adelaide would try and match any offer because he's a restricted free agent. So it's a very complicated scenario.
Yeah, and what's the reason he wants... Does he want to come back to... Well, he's obviously from Geelong.
He
wants to come back to Victoria and it's family. That's to be closer to family. Right.
Yeah, and Geelong would make complete sense because Moggs Creek, which is where it's from, small country town, is not far from Geelong. And obviously we've seen just the most unprecedented circumstances at the Crows, and who knows how that's affected Paddy Dangerfield's mindset. That might change his mindset one way, saying, I think he said on Wednesday in the radio interview, I'm torn between two families. I've got my family at the Adelaide Crows, which I've come to love over the past 8 years, and I've got my family at home. And then you've got, knowing everything that's happened, does that play on your mind that you do only live once? And this is my life, and if I want to spend it with my family in my hometown, well then, can you begrudge that? I mean, this is about money.
No, you can't. I wasn't sure how good of a season he'd been having, Paddy Dangerfield. I hadn't seen a heap of Adelaide games, but I saw him in round one when they rolled us and he was outstanding. So I thought I'd have a bit of a look and see, do a bit of study, and I looked at the Coaches Association award. Yep. They vote, all the coaches vote each week on the games that their clubs have played in, and he's not in the top 10. Now, I couldn't find a list that actually went any lower than the top 10, but he wasn't in the top 10 for the Coaches Association. But I got onto to CrownBet, the betting site, and found out that he was 10th favourite in Brownlow Medding punting. So I assume that there's some sort of knowledgeable people there who would set those markets. He's averaging 27 disposals and 6 tackles, which I think is the most in recent history in the last few years. So from all that evidence, you'd assume he's having a brilliant year, and all the hype is justified on how well he's going.
Coaches Association Award, always telling though, Drew. I must admit that I've been seduced by him since his draft year. I've loved the way he plays.
Yeah.
I think he's an enormous player. I've seen a lot of Adelaide this year, including a few games live. I think he's been fantastic. Structurally, he's obviously really important. I don't think he does everything right all the time, but he's so versatile. He's certainly committed to the cause over there and has been all throughout the year, which I think was part of the question going into the season. How much of his heart was in the Adelaide Football Club, and therefore how would that translate on field? But I think he's performed sensationally for them as far as giving his all. I think he's had a pretty good season.
So we're saying that he is, and this is worth all the fuss that it's being made up to be.
Well, I think the interesting thing, as you say, is the Brownlow betting. I think people do get seduced by his name. You say his name and immediately think he's this wonderful player, he's a fantastic player. I think he is as well. But there's probably 10% of Mayo on that perhaps, because he's such a great guy. You love hearing from him.
And as ridiculous as it sounds, he's got a great name. that has more cut through too, in a way, because it just stands out on the page with all the column inches that are written about him, Dangerfield, and all the headlines that come with it.
Yeah, and you're certainly a guy that when you go to the footy, you watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe there's 10% on top of that, Drew.
Yep.
But Tyson Densley just walked past, and he's still dirty. The fact that you sacked him at the end of last year, Drew, you've just given us the evil eye. Is he worth the fuss if you're Geelong? If you're a Geelong fan, you'd want him there.
I reckon it's worth it. I reckon it's a great story. It's a great footy story. It's one a storyline that we're continuing to follow all year long.
Yeah, and we did on afl.com.au some centre clearance stats a couple of weeks ago, and he's a barometer for Adelaide still to this day. And if he joins the Cats and gets inside the centre square with Blitzarves, who leads for Geelong, centre square clearances this year, and they clear the ball out of the centre more often when he's inside, get Dangerfield, Blitzarves and Selwood at the centre bounce, and that could change that side dramatically.
All right, I want to switch now to a former Crow and ask a similar question. Kurt Tippett, do you think the Swans could be regretting their decision to spend so much on him, remembering as well that he didn't play for the first half of the season when he first arrived because of his suspension?
This is a difficult one because it's obviously not his fault because they've recruited him. And at the time when they recruited Kurt Tippett, they wouldn't have known that Lance Franklin was keen to move up from Hawthorn. So,
or did they?
I don't think they would have because there's a good 12-month gap between Tippett arriving and then Franklin showing that his intent to get up there. They played pretty well together, though, last year. I think we're forgetting that. They kicked. I think Tippett kicked almost 40 goals last year and Franklin... he's kicked, I'm not sure of his exact number, but he's kicked over 50. So they've shown value last year. He's played a bit more in the ruck this year, which isn't a good sign in a way because it means that his output up forward, he hasn't been as good.
He's out for a couple of weeks. He's hurt his hand. John Longmire rarely fires up in a press conference, but he did get a little bit antsy when a reporter asked him whether or not the hand injury was an alibi. I like cutting questions, but I thought whichever reporter asked that, that's a brave question.
What's been your best, Matty, do you reckon?
I had a good one last week with Eddie when I asked about Bucks.
That's a good one.
That was probably my highlight of the year.
Eddie gave you a bit of a clip.
But people said, oh, you stood up to him. I said, well, you guys, I'm not answering that question.
Well, tell the people what it was.
I asked him about, there's a bit of talk going around about Bucks and what Bucks needs to do to earn a new contract. And so we were in a doorstop kind of situation at a big press conference. We talked about why we were there and everything and just said, oh, by the way, I'm to footy. Can we just ask you, what does Bucks need to do to earn a new contract? It wasn't a particularly loaded question, really. I mean, he's got 18 months left on his contract.
Oh, yeah.
So that's fair enough. But you know, it's just a question. I'm not predicting what the answer is going to be. It's just my job to ask questions, really, at the end of the day, isn't it, Drew? And
antagonise.
So, and Eddie's, you know, fired. I've been, oh, you know, I'm not answering that. And I said, why? Why are you so reluctant? And then he's going, oh, I'm not reluctant, mate. So it's quite good.
Did he say Matt?
No.
No, he said mate.
Oh, were you insulted?
I'm not sure if he got my name. I've interviewed him so many times before.
To the footy's heaviest hitters there. All we needed was Hutchie.
Yeah.
But I love getting...
Eddie could have thought it was Hutchie.
And I did say, because I often get people heckle me in the street and call me Hutchie. You don't know why. I don't look anything like you.
No.
But it was
well,
at the end of the...
I'm not sure anything.
At the end of the interview,
if you've had a big lunch,
it was
Maddie.
Good grab. Eddie always gives you
and
good grab.
A bad hair day.
Eddie always gives you a grab. And then he said that they're going to try and... I tried to ask about Dangerfield and Treloar, and he said, oh, we're going to try and recruit Ronaldo. Yeah. So that grab made the news all over the country. So I was pretty happy about that.
So I reckon on Tippett, they wouldn't regret recruiting him, but footy clubs need ambition, the Swan Shield, as much as anyone, and probably do it better than anyone.
I agree.
They might regret what they're paying him at the moment, but what they would be, the professional outfit they were, they'd be wanting him to play better footy and working their bums off to make that happen, because he gets going and they play like they did in the early part of last year with him and Buddy alongside one another. Then away they go. Now, one of the conundrums, of course, is Mike Pike's been in and out of the team, and his form hasn't been fantastic when he's been in the side as well. So Tippett's having to play in the ruck. Mm. They don't know what to do with Sam Reid. A big loss on the weekend to the Hawks, but the month before that for the Swans hasn't looked sensational. They were really poor against the Brisbane Lions until late in the match. Their footy's not going as swimmingly as what we would have thought.
All right, you're listening to AFL Exchange. Lockie Keefe and Josh Thomas. It's kind of the forgotten story of the year, I reckon. And it kind of hasn't made as many headlines. I reckon because still the Essendon scandals kind of got trumps as far as drug scandals go. So these two haven't been in the news as much. And Collingwood's done a pretty good job of almost shutting the story down along the way, I think, as well. It hasn't got a lot of oxygen. But things have been happening behind the scenes that we don't know about. And Nathan Buckley said on Wednesday that he believes that we might get a conclusion to this as far as ASADA's concerned in the next couple of weeks.
When's the hearing again?
Well, this is the thing. It's all been held behind camera, so the exact dates and everything haven't been revealed. Okay. It's to the best of my knowledge. Do you know anything more than I do about that, Coles?
No.
No, so there you go.
I had a look on Collingwood's website, and Lockie Keefe and Josh Thomas, they're still on their list when you click on players and senior players, and so they're still on the books there, but they're still not training. A month ago, Gary Pert said he expects the pair to receive 2-year bans, so they're preparing for that. But the question is, which you're asking here, Matt, is are they a chance to be retained on Collingwood's list because of Adam Treloar? Now, is that retaining them on the list if they get 2-year bans, they're not going to use them as trade.
This is my theory.
Right.
Lockie Keefe and Josh Thomas have the same manager as Adam Treloar, who the Pies want on their list next year, the GWS player. Obviously a fantastic talent, he's had a wonderful season, looks like he could be going. Collingwood haven't ruled out delisting Thomas or Keefe. Should they get 2-year bans. Now, remember that if they get 2-year bans, that will include this season, which they haven't played. So it'll be effectively a 1-year ban, one more year to go. Could they still be on Collingwood's list? Because that will help them
get Adam Treloar, so they manage,
Can you afford to keep two spots on your list like that for...
Well, perhaps they rookie list them or pay them minimum.
Effectively until the end of... So they could rookie list them next season, couldn't they? So this season's done. And this season will count as part of their suspension. So it's actually only next season. If it's going to be a 2-year ban, it's actually only next season, and then they're done. I mean, this season to write off anyway.
Yeah, but again, they haven't played this year, so it's still not as if they're only going to...
It's really interesting. What I hope out of all of this, and I know lots of stuff's been happening behind the scenes, and I believe that preliminary hearings and all that taking place, but why... at some point, the public, the fans, deserve to know what has happened here. And I hope all the truth comes out at the end of the day and we hear the full story as to how they... how did this substance get in their system?
Mm.
Surely the footy world has a right to know.
Yeah.
Why not?
Oh, I'm not... Oh, you haven't given me much time to think about that. I'm not totally sure about that. The fact is that clenbuterol's being found in their system.
How?
That's relevant how?
I think
is it relevant?
I think it's absolutely relevant.
I think it's relevant. I also think in due course, Matt.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
It'll come out in time.
That's fine. This cloak and dagger system we have where everything's held behind in camera, I don't like it. It's not transparent.
So all I'm saying is if I was the manager of Adam Treloar and I had Lachie Keefe and Josh Thomas to look after as well,
yep.
Adam Treloar's a pretty big bargaining tool.
Yep.
Is he doing the right thing by Adam Treloar if he uses them
if
as bargaining
Adam
tool?
Adam Treloar wants to leave and no one knows whether he does or not, then it's a pretty big bargaining tool, surely.
Some cunning management there, if that was to be the case.
Well, the job of a manager is to make sure he does the right thing by his clients.
Yes. But each of them individually, though. Interesting point, because it wasn't it Liam Pickering who managed Franklin and
Clarko.
And Clarkson, yep. and didn't tell Clarkson that Franklin was off to Sydney. And did they part ways?
Yeah, they did not long after. Yeah.
So Clarkson no longer with Pickering?
Yep. And, of course, Buddy no longer with Liam Pickering
as well.
Well,
he went across to a celebrity agent, didn't
he?
Yeah. How's that going?
Well, I imagine it's going okay.
What was that lady's name again? Was it Sharon Finnegan or something?
You've got me there, Matt. You could be correct, yeah. It's the same as his fiancée's.
Yes. And also, I think she manages other, like Samantha Armitage. I might be
speaking out. And the fella on the Today Show?
Carl Stefanovic. Yep. Yeah, a few of those celebrity types.
Do you ever watch any of that stuff, Drew?
Yeah, I like Carl.
Do you?
Yeah. I quite like the Cash Cow on Sunrise.
No, that's just...
I find the cash cow hilarious.
Do you? I think it's corny.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that's the joke, though.
Okay, right. Yeah.
You just don't take it too seriously.
Who's your favourite TV?
How could you take any of it seriously? I think it's all rubbish.
Hey, while we're talking about things you can't really... What about Mick Fanning? Every other footy show this week has spoken about it. It's a bit off topic. So
we better.
So we better talk about
it. You know what?
Is that not the most amazing thing you've ever seen?
Yeah. But the only thing how bad was that press conference?
With the Red Bull?
It's not the Red Bull. It's not Mick Fanning's fault or the surfer's fault. But some of those questions from the journos, I've got 45 minutes. How many times can you answer the same question? The poor two blokes were sitting up there. Some journos just talking so their voices are heard. Can't stand it. I felt sorry for them.
There was a bit of... That press conference was in Sydney.
Yeah.
And there was a bit of the... How would you describe it?
Sydney media. Just a bit of me, sort of.
Apparently a lot of the networks sent more than one report. I don't know why they needed more than one reporter per network at that press conference. What question was going to go unasked?
They all wanted to be heard.
Yeah, it was one of those ones.
And it was live too. So
it was live everywhere. Yeah.
Anyway, it's
fantastic that Mick survived.
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't be back in the water for quid. So no chance.
I love the beach.
What are your speedos wearing, maybe?
No, I normally wear boardies.
Top off?
I have what are they called? One of those
rash
vests.
Yuck.
No, I do. No. I do. What?
You disagree. Do you wear a rashie at the beach?
No, I'm not really a beach goer.
In Victorian waters, if I'm up on the Queensland or something, you can get away with just the boys.
Yep.
Get the rig out?
Yep, absolutely. All right.
This shows your real shirt-off mentality. You just said yuck because someone wears a top on the beach.
This program's out of control.
Now, this reminds me, though, we kept a close eye, and I'm surprised you didn't bring this up, Drew, when you talked about your experience after you rubbed out, probably conservatively, for that... horrible hit behind the play on Andrew Mackey, who's yet to get his voice back from what I understand. You did a bit of Channel 7 stuff and we were very keen to know whether that was on the prime time Channel 7.
Oh, so what was it?
Or on the dodgy 7 mates.
I don't know. What was it?
You know, Drew.
It'd be prime time.
It was on 7, mate.
That's my middle name. Prime time.
Prime time featuring.
No, they threw you away, Drew.
Was it on 7, mate, was it?
Yeah.
It was in HD, though.
In the back blocks of television land.
All right. We've got a couple of quick questions to finish with. First of all, which player has surprised you most and which player has underwhelmed you most in 2015? I'm going to go around the table on this one.
I'm going to start off. I'm just going to say Todd Goldstein. I know he's a teammate. He was second in our best and fairest last year, but I wasn't sure, given his background and his development. When he first came to North, not to pot him too much here, but he had the basketball athleticism around a contest, and when he was, his ruck work was great, but I just wondered if he could get across the ground, whether his endurance could allow him to do that, and whether he could take enough contested marks to be a really good player, and he just he's just brained him so far this year. He'll win our best. He could stop playing now and he'll win our best and fairest. It's justified that he's in the top couple of favourites of the Brownlow medal. He has surprised me in a really good way this year.
Ty Vickery, for me, he's normally shocking. Like, he's just... Jeez. He's the most frustrating player if you're watching him as a fan, which I occasionally do, as opposed to a reporter. But he's actually been okay,
yep.
Particularly the past few weeks. You don't agree?
No, I think he's been important, particularly when the Tigers got going, when he came back into the team.
Interesting, just one quick point on this. I want to get Drew's opinion. Sean Hampson obviously had to bide his time in the VFL. Finally, he's got a game. He reckons there is room in the Tigers team for him, Ivan, and Ty, as long as Ty plays up forward. Is that... a bit of a stretch? I mean, he has to make that argument, Sean Hampson, because he's the third option.
No, I think it's a stretch. Unless Ty starts kicking fours and fives each week and you want to leave him in the forward line, then nah. Sides are really reluctant to go with too many tools.
David Armitage from Al gave him my most improved for the season. What I think, outside of his great footy that he's played, he's been really important at important times for the Saints, in some of their wins in particular, and has announced himself as a leader.
He has, yeah, absolutely.
Most underwhelming player? Who can you pot,
bro? I don't want to pot anybody. Given that we've already had a bit of a... We've mentioned Kurt Tippett this year, but just want to see him kick more goals, more so from a, I don't know, positive point of view. Saw what he's capable of in his 12 games that he played in his first season at Sydney. He kicked 30-odd goals. Last year, he was pretty good with Franklin. This year, struggling a bit. So maybe this year, he's just sort of underwhelmed a little bit.
Nick Malcheski, for mine, went to the Gold Coast on huge money. Didn't play between rounds 5 and 10. I mean, that's just not acceptable, to be honest.
Why didn't he... Well, it's obviously injuries.
Oh, no. I reckon there was form involved.
Form
there was
injuries.
Definitely form involved. Yeah, yeah.
It's a bit of a statement from Rocket.
Yeah, there's definitely
gave him
involved.
A rocket.
So what did you call that?
What?
What did you say it was? Not acceptable.
Not acceptable, yes.
I want to talk to you about that a little bit later on. No. I didn't have one because I'm a real positive man, so I said to Petrie, who should I have?
Oh, yeah.
And he said, just say Jared Waite, easy target.
I've been really thrown on the bus there.
And I have too.
So Jared Waite's mine.
We should be used to it,
Drew's. Let's say it's mine. Keep Drew out of trouble.
Honestly, Nick Malcheski made so many headlines about his move to the Gold Coast. He was meant to be a key part of their success this season, and he hasn't lived up to the hype.
Yep. I just want to take your point on not acceptable.
I was saying not acceptable from Gold Coast's perspective.
Yeah, I just don't know what it means. Oh. We'll talk about that later.
All right. I'm in trouble now for my use of the English language, apparently. You're listening to AFL Exchange right around Australia, right around the world, wherever you are. Make
Twitter
sure
question,
you shoot us
Matty?
A tweet.
Yeah, there's a Twitter question here.
Oh, he's going into it.
Oh, segue.
Cut him. Segue.
And our Twitter question comes from Thor. Really?
Oh. Yep.
It wasn't Thor in like some animated kind of...
It's Greek mythology, Matt.
Right.
Yeah, getting a history lesson too.
Bit before my time. Thor asks on Twitter, can you explain, it seems the boundary arms throw the ball towards the centre circle and not square to the boundary?
Mm. That's a good question.
I don't know exactly what the rule is.
No,
the
boundary umpires do. Yep, their reference point when they throw the footy in is the centre circle. Now, it used to be pretty much throw it in, as Thor says, square.
It's actually Norse mythology. Apologies.
It's to throw it in square to where the ball went out of bounds. But yes, boundary umpires throw it towards the centre circle.
That actually makes sense, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. But when
you're playing on an oval.
Yep.
So it could advantage, it's fairer.
Well, exactly. Inside 50, if there's a forward pocket throw, and they used to throw it basically to the top of the goal square, which helped the forward side.
Yeah, of course. Mm. All right, you're listening to AFL Exchange. We've got Petrie's Point coming up, plus our Round 17 previews. Stay with us. Well, as we know, Drew Petrie was suspended, didn't get to play on Friday night. So we thought for Petrie's Point this week, we'd ask you, what was your night like?
Well, it was good in the end. In the first half, I was a bit toey because we weren't playing so well. But I spent the whole game in the coach's box. I actually asked Brad during the week if I could sit in the stats box, which is next to the coach's box, because I didn't want to ask him for too much. But he said, no, sit in the coach's box with us. So I was given the privilege to sit in the back row. And I loved the experience. In the bye week, you get a rest from footy, but there's no footy on. Being suspended is terrible, but I enjoyed being able to see what goes on behind the scenes. Now, the coach's box is it's a very controlled environment in there. I sort of likened it to a control room or a NASA control room, because there is a lot of laptops set up, There's a lot of analysis going on, and it's very quiet in there. The crowd, you can't hear the crowd noise. When you're sitting in the crowd at Etihad Stadium or any of the grounds, the atmosphere is huge. There was 35,000 people there Friday night, but you can't hear anything. It's really minimal, the amount of noise. So it's a very sort of sterile environment, very quiet in there. The communication lines between the coaches are really clear. You have Brad, the assistant for the midfield, forward line and the back line. We have our list manager, our forward scout, if you like, and then there's a whole lot of other staff analysing data and information as the game's going. So there's a lot of people in there, but it's not a case of people jumping over each other to talk or ask too many questions. Brad's really clear. If he has an issue with a person on the ground, he speaks to the line coach, looks for them to give him an answer, and as a problem is solved in that moment. There's no guys jumping over or speaking about different areas of the ground. People really concentrate on their specific lines, and Brad goes to those people for information when he needs. Maddie, you got a question?
Is that immediate?
Yep.
So the line coach must have an answer for Brad straight away?
Yes.
Always does?
Yes.
Doesn't know, I need to go and find more information on that? Or
No. Exactly. And I wanted to keep abreast of the game too, in case he asked me a question. And after the game, my head was absolutely spinning, trying to keep up with everything that was going on structurally, but trying to watch the game as well. I was also trying to just watch the forward line, but got caught up in just watching the game as a spectator a bit as well. So for the assistant coaches, whilst the communication lines are very clear and it seems in control, it's very intense. The coaches walk out of that, and a few of them said they walk out of that and their heads are spinning as well. Like, they've only sat down for 2 hours and watched the game of footy effectively, but having to be ready for that answer. Brad asked me a question in the second quarter, and I probably had a moment there where my concentration had just drifted a little bit, and I came back with a fairly sort of straight-batted answer, and that was the only question I was asked for the night. So I didn't expect to get any, but I was asked one about the forward line and gave a fairly basic answer, and I think from that he might have known not to ask me any more. Just the amount of people too that are in the coach's box. So there's six people in the small stats box that's off to the side, and there was also a couple of corporate sitting in there. Now, in the main part of the box where Brad is and all the assistant coaches are, there's probably 10 or 11 people, and there's two other people who pay to be in special coterie groups, special membership groups within the footy club are in there. And I asked one of the assistants, does this happen every week? And they said, yeah, every single week there are a couple of sponsors or special members or people who tip, basically tipping some good dollars, sitting in the box as well. So it's a bit of a privileged situation for those people who get to sit in the box, because once upon a time that was never the case.
Of course.
I couldn't think Dennis Pagan didn't have too many blokes sitting in the bench, sitting in the box to listen to his coaching. So the lines of communication were clear. There was minimal crowd noise. It was a really controlled environment, a really sort of sterile environment, like a control room.
Is it one voice talking? Like, is only Brad talking, and then the coach only talk when? Do they have to communicate with the other players on the bench? Like, the line coaches might communicate down to the bench to talk to a player. And can there be two people talking at once?
Not often are there two people talking at once. Darren Crocker had a set of headphones on as well, and he was talking to the bench coaches a bit off to the side. But he was sort of three or four seats up from where Brad was, so could do that without annoying Brad. One thing that I thought was interesting too was all the assistants have laptops in front of them, and they have the real-time footage going through. So if there's a ball up which Essendon won and went forward and kicked a goal, then immediately that would be getting analysed by one of the assistant coaches in there, and some information would be getting then fed to either Darren Crocker and then from Crocker to the bench, or they'd give it straight, that sort of information, to Brad. So
specifically looking at what Essendon were doing or what North were doing?
Both. If we had a player standing in the wrong position, or if Essendon had brought a couple of more half forwards up to the stoppage and then worked it forward and through handball, a chain of handball, then we'd be looking at that and analysing that and fixing that.
So we often hear from coaches that they can't affect the game too much on match day. Is that your belief after this experience or not?
No, I think the coaches can, but by the time a message gets to the bench, the coach gives it to the runner gets to the player, it can be a minute plus, so it's hard to affect immediately.
How often do they just let the game happen?
A lot. They let rotations happen because I think Brad must probably sent six messages to bring a particular player off, six right. interchange messages.
And out only Brad would do that?
From the box, only Brad would Brad or Darren Crocker can do that.
Mm-hmm.
The guys rotate themselves within the game. So Brad would be giving minimal messages to players about rotations. It would more be instructional messages.
How often are players getting on the phone speaking to the coaches in the box?
Yeah, I think there would have been four or five throughout the game. Andrew Swallow got on the phone once. Jack Zeeble on the phone once. But probably to Brad that was, but to Darren Crocker probably spoke to three or four of the players as well.
I don't expect you to name names, but there would have been some very good bakes
yeah.
in the box. How many did you hear?
Oh, there was a bit of raising of the voice. But when you're watching TV at home and you see the coach slam the phone on the table, you think that happens a lot. It might have happened twice a quarter, so eight times for a game, which might be, some people might say, well, that is a lot, but it's a lot calmer than what you'd expect and what television portrays a coach to be like.
And is it correct that you tapped Brad on the back at one point and hanging a post-it note saying weight's out of position?
Yeah, no, it didn't happen. I didn't want to say boo in there and I didn't.
Did you wish that you had a laptop?
Nah.
You see, just match the cutaways with Drew in the box, just tapping away at the back.
So this is what we want to hear from people, is what do you think Drew Petrie was doing when he lost concentration? I'm going to put a couple of things to you, which I think.
Right.
He was playing words with friends. or looking around for where the camera was. Maybe leaning down to get in Brad's shot.
I don't know what I was doing, but I just glanced away for a couple of moments, and in that time, the question was asked.
Had one of his buffhead mates from Ballarat texting him that you're on seven, mate, and we don't get it up here.
Really good insight, though. All that technology that is used during a game, I don't think that story's been told. Like, I don't think we, as fans, get an insight into all of that.
Yeah.
And it's we see some of it at training, like what you guys, because we go to training all the time, you see some of the stuff that's used at training, and you see that the fact that there's cameras from the club shooting every training session and all that sort of stuff. But
Drew, what about, I know that, I imagine North Melbourne, so I think every club has the green, orange and red when a guy's in that zone where he needs to get off the ground. He's either ran too much or he spent too much time out there.
Yep.
Is that in the stats box or in the coach's box, and were those messages being sent down that Ben Jacobs needs to come off for a rest now?
That's in both. Yeah, that's in both. We have a data analyst. I had four or five people sitting in front of me, one with midfield sort of stuff, one with the live feed, or two with live feed of the game. Then there'd be all the GPS data, which you're referring to. So on the bench, they have that as well, and they mainly do those moves from the interchange bench.
All right, you're listening to AFL Exchange. We preview round 17 in just a moment. Round 17 begins on Friday night, as most rounds do, apart from those few rounds where we have a Thursday night.
Thursday night games.
Yeah. But this one really...
Nice start, Matty.
...isn't exciting, everyone. That's fair to say.
I'm sorry.
I know our job is to pump up the game, but...
Someone's playing football that doesn't excite us.
Are you excited about Carlton and Hawthorn?
I'm excited about every game, Matt.
Well, excited to see what Hawthorn can do.
I still think that they made a mistake putting Carlton on so many Friday night games.
Yeah, they probably did, Matt, but I don't get this obsession. They've got to play at some point.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Put them on at 4:40 on Sunday.
You would have heard me, Drew.
Yes.
Go out and do something else. If you don't like it, if you're not interested in the game, if it's on 4:40 on Sunday... Go and do something else.
No, but I think we all want something good to be on Friday night. We all love footy. We want to watch a good game on a Friday night. I just fear that we're not going to see it this Friday. I'll tell you what, we might be proven wrong.
I appreciate that sentiment. But, there's a lot of things happening in the world. Mm. You're welcome to go and do them.
Well, there's a pretty big soccer game happening on Friday night. I'm tipping that the AFL would rather have eyeballs on its code than on the round ball code at another venue.
Well, I've heard there's already 90,000 tickets being sold to that game. That soccer
Look,
game.
Look, that's a legitimate talking point.
No, I'll be in Brisbane. Just we speak sometimes about how many players each side has used throughout the season. Carlton has used 40 players, which is equal most in the competition with the Gold Coast Suns, having used 40 players. I think it was. I think the best may have been Hawthorn or Fremantle with low 30s or even maybe high 20s. Last week, Hawthorn's second half absolutely outstanding. They kicked 14 goals, three behinds to blitz the Sydney Swans. Carlton couldn't get the footy inside forward 50 themselves, only having 35 inside 50s last week. It'll be Hawthorn in a canter. They are just unbelievable. And Ruffy to come back in after missing a couple of games just to kick five goals, just like he hadn't missed a beat.
It's interesting, you know, Hawthorn really don't talk themselves up. I mean, not most teams don't talk themselves up, but Hawthorn are very good at talking themselves down. Luke Hodge was asked at a press conference during the week about, you've annihilated Freo and Sydney. Like, surely you guys are the... Yeah, and he goes, oh, well, you know, the Sydney game, it was a lot closer, like, statistically than the score. And we ran that grab in Footy Feed just to demonstrate this is how on message they are as a football club. And it doesn't matter who you talk to. They always try to play things down. This is despite the fact that quite legitimately they are on track potentially for a three-peat.
Mm. John Barker playing under Alistair Clarkson as well. So another Clarko pupil gets to meet his master.
Mm. Anyway, everyone's tipping Hawthorn?
We are.
Hawks for me. I think it'll be a blockbuster, though, Matt.
Righto. Let's go to... what's it called? Spotless... No, sorry. This is the one in...
Canberra.
Star Trek Oval. Yes, it's a delivery kind of thing.
Yeah, it is.
It's actually written on the page in front of me. I'm going well, aren't I? Star Trek Oval in the nation's capital hosts GWS and Geelong.
First time the Cats have been there since 2006. I was proud of the Cats last week. I was surprised, probably a better word, because I thought it'd be a changing of the guard last week when the Bulldogs went down. But without Selwood, the Cats showed plenty of heart and ticker, which is the same thing, really, Drew.
Is it?
Well, and, ticker is a
very well. This
quite
is
a for heart, isn't it?
This is another game where the changing of the guard sort of mentality comes into it. Mm. Pretty close game the last time they played.
Yep.
And a big game for both teams as they try to get the march onto the finals.
I might tip GWS.
Last time the Cats played in Canberra, as you mentioned, in 06, was against us.
Ah.
I remember the game fondly. I was sort of a spare man across halfback, had 27 possessions this day.
Right.
I was quite happy with myself.
Brownlow votes?
Oh, probably none.
How many have you got in your career?
Not enough. Selwood back. Motlop had his best game for the season.
Yep.
Which is, and probably so did Josh Caddy.
Josh Caddy was terrific.
So those two blokes stood up in the absence of Joel Selwood last week. Tight game. Hard one to pick this one.
I'm gonna pick GWS. They've got the home ground advantage.
Here's a little stat for you. Geelong are 7-8 from their last 8 round 17 games.
Oh,
how about that? So round 17.
Mm. It's a favourite of the fans.
I hate that sort of stats.
Mm.
They just do my head in.
Well, I just had a look through the... history books, Matt. And
Manuka Oval is obviously what Star Trek Oval is more commonly known as.
Yeah.
Just for those of you that get getting caught out reading the fixture, like I just did.
Yeah, I think the Giants will win as well.
Adelaide and Gold Coast is...
Drew Lowther, would you like to have a tip before Matt goes on to our next game?
You've got to be quick around here.
Mm.
Hurry up.
I think the Giants are going to have too much leg pace. Leg pace? Is that a footy? Footyism?
Leg pace.
Just pace, I think.
Yeah. Leg speed.
Leg speed.
Unless they run around on their hands.
Yeah, leg pace. They go, oh, yeah.
Giants for me.
Righto. Adelaide and Gold Coast is at the Adelaide Oval. This game is at 20 minutes to 2 in South Australia.
Mm, these sides played in round 6. So the second time for the year, Gold Coast went down. Adelaide had about a 30-point win in this game. I reckon it'll be similar. Gold Coast, whilst they weren't too bad, they haven't been too bad since their bye weekend. Adelaide had a really solid game last week, fitting that they won that game, and I think they'll win again against Gold Coast.
Patrick Dangerfield, last week's best on ground in the showdown, Scott Thompson, have enjoyed recent outings against the Gold Coast Suns, polling 7 votes each in the last 4 games.
Adelaide for me.
In the Brownlow. Crows for me, interestingly, Rodney Eade's first game as an AFL coach at Adelaide Oval.
It was. He coached. Oh, so, no, Rodney, what? So the first, oh, I get you
this
now.
This will be the first time.
First time he's ever coached at Adelaide Oval.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
It'll be his 17th venue.
That's not that much of a surprise.
AFL coach.
Well, not really.
17th venue, though, Matt.
Yeah, well, that's cool.
Done well.
Jeez. Are you here to bring out the world's most irrelevant stats?
Crows for me.
Richmond and Fremantle, first versus fifth at the MCG. Twilight game on Saturday. Is this the match of the round? Probably
close to.
Is, yeah. West Coast Sydney, maybe. But, yeah, we'll get to that in a minute, but Freo and Richmond, I mean, obviously the intrigue comes because Richmond beat Freo.
Yeah.
And they had that amazing 8-goal start.
That was round 10. I had to rub my eyes when I saw that these two sides are playing again this week.
So what are we... I mean, this is really interesting, looking at the Crownbet odds.
Yeah, what are they saying?
This is just the latest. I mean, this could change by the time you're listening. But Richmond are favourites, $1.82.
Mm.
Freo, $2.02.
That's fair. They beat them over there in Perth. So you can understand. And Freo haven't been convincing.
No.
Good to see, though. We spoke about this bloke on the podcast last week, Chris Mayne. He played up front because he has been thrown around a little bit. Played up front last week, kicked 4 goals and had 9 tackles last week's game. So very good. And that's where he should be should be playing more often. Chris Mayne is in Freo's forward line.
Is Nat Fyfe playing? I haven't checked. He had some scans earlier in the week, which caused a big stir in Perth.
Now, the coach said they were just scans on a corky. We scan him for the flu, he said. So don't worry about Nat Fyfe. He'll play. Needs to. Tigers were very, very good last time. Two out of the last three against Fremantle as well. Ty Vickery, very good that night in Perth.
Yeah, he was.
I reckon when the Tigers come of age as well.
It was.
In this season, people stood up and thought, oh, okay, this is a really important...
They're not going to replicate the 8-goal start, though, and all.
While he hasn't been blistering, Hayden Ballantyne will be a sore out, not just for this game, but for the rest of the season until perhaps the preliminary final for Freo as well.
Excuse me, ignorance, but what's he done?
Torn pec.
Right.
Yep. Yeah.
Interesting.
It's not related to Sean Peck, of course.
In a race to be ready
John Peck,
for...
Anyway.
I thought it was Sean Penn.
Yeah.
Race to be ready for September.
Yeah.
So can I just ask you what your tip is?
Richmond.
Fremantle for me.
I'll stay loyal and tip Richmond.
It's good of you.
Essendon and Port Adelaide.
Well, yeah.
What did you see from the Bombers last week?
Hooker. Cale Hooker. Mm. Where do you play him? The confusion reigns because he's taken 13 grabs. Not so many goals he kicked last week, but geez, he was dominant.
Well, Owen Callum Toomey asked the coach, James Heard, that after the game, and it was something... Heard said to him, that's a good question, Callum.
Yeah.
I don't think it's something that he'd ponder too much, but after last week, it's a serious question. They're both not great kicks for goal, though, are they, Hooker and Carlisle?
That's the thing. And Essendon play a different forward line. You see most sides get their forwards to hit up to the wings and help defend and help the defenders kick it when they're under pressure off half-back. But Essendon play their forwards deep inside 50. They leave Joe Danaher and Cale Hooker deep inside 50. They lengthen the ground. They play a little bit more positional football. So that's something that we don't usually see most sides do.
Just to touch off the subject, Alistair Clarkson, speaking on the couch on Fox Footy on Monday night, called it a catch when he was talking about somebody's marking ability. He catches it pretty well.
Uh-huh.
What do you call it internally? Because I know that this is part of the footy vernacular at times.
I call it a mark or a clunk.
If you
clunk a few.
As a broadcaster, if you say catch in any kind of broadcast in relation to a mark, you are instantly hounded down by the viewers or the listeners. I personally haven't done it, but I've seen it from other people who I might have been working with, and people do not like it being called a catch.
Anyone at North call it a catch?
No, I don't hear catch used.
Oh, I've heard it a bit lately.
Have you really?
I don't like it.
Is it like, you know, we think we're trying to find fancier words?
Well, catch isn't all that fancy.
Things. Well, it's not. Well, we even like we say defense now when it's defense.
Yeah.
That's an Americanism
that's
come in.
Well, that's a difficult one.
So, yeah, I've never heard it called a catch. It's a mark or a duke or a clunk or a grab.
Can Port Adelaide still make the finals?
I'm saying no.
Unlikely.
Yeah, unlikely. Mm-hmm. Who's going to win this game, though?
Port Adelaide for me.
Mm.
Just because they need to.
Yeah, I think they'll win this one as well. Matty?
Yeah.
Port Adelaide all round.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to AFL Exchange. Let's move to Sunday's games. The Western Bulldogs and Collingwood. Gee, Collingwood need a win this one, don't they?
They do.
They're ninth on the ladder at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Goldsack, I'm not sure if he's going to play this week, but he hasn't played for the last few. I think it's the last three games Tyson Goldsack hasn't played. I think he's so important.
He was out there training today.
He's so important to their structure, which is a footy word. But when he plays in the back line for Collingwood, it just allows everything to look a bit more proper. It doesn't require someone to sort of fill in or fill a void. I think he's one of their most important players structurally. So if he gets out there, that'll help them. The Western Bulldogs, their ball movement off halfback this year has been sensational, with Rob Murphy leading the charge, Matty Boyd also, and which has had a twofold effect. They've flicked those two players to halfback, but then they've put those young blokes into the centre, who have had influence in most of the Doggies' wins in or Pickin, who was a tagger last year. You got Dal House and company as well. So the Dogs, with their ball movement off halfback, has been spot on. Hard to pick a winner, but
and it's at Etihad again as well for Collingwood.
Yeah,
they've lost three of their last four at Etihad.
I'm picking the Bulldogs.
They haven't met since round 13, 2014 as well. Travis Cloak kicked six goals.
It's more than a year ago.
He'll be sorely missed, Travis Cloak. Pies have to find a way to win.
Geez, they need to win.
Bulldogs for me.
I'm going to tip Collingwood just because I need to try and catch up some tips. But, you know...
You're out of it, though.
I know.
Matty.
I'm terrible. We need Collingwood in the finals from a news perspective.
Oh, yeah. Do we?
Yeah.
Oh, right. That's, well, we better put them in then. We better let them in so that the crowds go up.
They're the biggest club in the land, and they just add to the hype.
Can you ring Gil and just tell him that, Drew, please? Yeah, that'd be great.
No.
All right.
Melbourne and St Kilda.
Do we need either of these in?
Not really.
Ah, well, it can be a draw. Let's not even talk about it, Matty.
These sides, going back to who's played each other recently, round 11. That's six weeks ago these sides played. 6 weeks ago. It's a game that got plenty of news, Matty. A two-point win to the Saners. Melbourne in this game, so St Kilda win by 2 points. Melbourne have 108 more disposals in this game. 108 more disposals, and they lose. St Kilda, with 108 less disposals, had 58 inside 50s, and Melbourne had 42. So I think Melbourne had 400 disposals for the game and only got the footy inside their forward 50 42 times. Now, most sides look for 50-plus in a game, so that suggests that Melbourne possessing the footy back then and still do it. If they have a 400 disposal game again, they need to get it forward a lot quicker, which will give them more inside 50s, which I think will give them more chances, which is a simple way of looking at it, but it will give them more chances to kick goals. Because as well, when you're buggering around with the footy, you allow your opposition to pressure you and turn it back over and score themselves.
When's the last time Melbourne defeated St Kilda, do you think?
It's been a lot of years.
Matt? Don't cheat, Matt.
I have it in front of me, but you go for it.
2006.
Yep.
11 times the Saints have beaten the Demons. It'll change this weekend. Matt Thompson, the Demons, victorious for me.
I'm tipping the Demons as well. I'm interested in Benny Guthrie's match preview on AFL.com.au on the AFL Live official app. How do you think he's tipped it? Have you looked?
No.
He's tipped St Kilda by 3 points.
There you go.
I found that quite interesting.
I'm going to go St Kilda. So you two are Melbourne and I'm the Saints.
Yep.
All right.
West Coast and Sydney, this is the other contender for match of the round.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be a tough task for the Sydney defence with Ted Richards copping a week.
Mm.
Josh Kennedy, Jack Darling.
No Tippett, of course, with the hand injury.
No Tippett. It's all pointing towards
West Coast.
West Coast, despite they had another injury. I can't think of the fella's name.
McGovern.
I think McGovern.
Yep.
He's gone. Defensive side. Defenders are gone. But what their midfield has been able to do is put good pressure and not allow the sides to get clean entries inside forward 50. So you could put, Matty Thompson, you could play in the West Coast Eagles back line at the moment and do okay, because the pressure from the midfield has been good enough to hold them up in your ratchet. These two sides have had some awesome battles over the years, but I think West Coast will win this game by a comfortable margin.
Yeah, West Coast for me.
Could be a big game for the young man, Tom Barris, who might play his...
Is his brother's... Has he got a sister called M?
Nice. Any man.
M. Barris.
Imagine if his sister's name was Emma.
Yeah.
And her name was M. Barris. That would be tremendous.
I'm glad you like that one, man.
Anyway, could debut. He's playing Waffle Tom Reserves Barris. Not that long ago. He's been playing very, very well in the Waffle. And he could come into the team and stand alongside Lance Buddy Franklin.
Mm.
At the first bounce.
Good luck.
What a debut that would be. Eagles for me as well.
All right, there are our tips for round 17.
We didn't get to North Melbourne.
You didn't do our game.
Brisbane, North Melbourne on Saturday night.
How the hell did I do that?
I'm not sure, man.
This is a game that... I think you dropped it last year, Drew, when you
missed it.
How did I skip the game?
Speaking of interesting stats, we haven't won up at the Gabba since 2005. Brent Harvey's played 12 games at the Gabba since his career started. He's only won twice up at the Gabba.
Wow. Has the coach mentioned the milestone and the need for the players to represent him as much as they represent the football club this week?
No.
Do you think it will get mentioned?
It will. It won't get mentioned until game day. Brad's not a big believer in using milestones to get a side going.
There's been a lot of talk about what I think was clearly a marketing department decision to have Boomer on the jumper.
You seen them?
Yeah, I think they look good. There's some people saying, that's not appropriate to have it's a team game, to have an individual recognising the jumper like that. I mean, Brad wouldn't even talk about it internally. You wouldn't talk. It's not something you discuss at a team meeting, surely.
No, zero. No conversation's been made about it's at the front of it. The middle stripe in the blue is saying Boomer.
And it's 400 on your back.
400 on your back. Yeah, I think it's outstanding. I reckon it's a great idea. I think our merchandise shop ordered 500 in first up. They sold straight away, and there's an order for another 1,200 Boomer jumpers.
It's good for the club from that perspective, but it's good for the fans as well.
Yeah, and it doesn't take away our attention whatsoever.
There were some commentators, I can't remember who they are, and I don't like naming names of other commentators, but we do listen to a lot of stuff and absorb a lot of stuff.
Nah, whoever said that needs to pull their head in.
Mm. Any other comments on the game?
North Melbourne for me.
Oh, yeah.
The Lions have started so well
over
recent weeks, and this has been part of your problem, Drew. When the Kangaroos get behind early, they struggle to find momentum in a game of footy. So if Brisbane do that again, look out. But I don't think that'll be the case this week.
One of the young blokes I just want to give a mention is Harris Andrews. I saw him play against Carlton when the Brisbane Lions won at Etihad Stadium earlier in the season. Mm. He's a very good mark. He stands 200 centimetres tall. Last week he took 10 marks, had 16 disposals and kicked a goal. Just a good, competitive young bloke. He's actually been playing in the back line, so I might spend a bit of time standing by his side on the weekend.
All right. Person of the week, and it's a big week for. We're almost out of time on the podcast.
My person of the week is Brianna Davies, taken number one in the women's draft, former Matilda as well. A wonderful athlete.
Yep, brilliant.
And a great congratulations to Brianna. Great selection as well.
Sticking with bees, I'm sticking with Boomer for my person of the week.
Not surprised there. Mine is another B. Brendan Goddard. Got the chance to interview him on Wednesday. Refreshingly honest, he doesn't mind a cashy though. He was doing another. He was doing another because he did a ribs one.
He
remember,
did the ribs,
that's the ribs.
Yeah, and then today Josh he was Gibson. Doing a kick for cash type thing at Gosh's Paddock.
Yep. Yeah,
how much do you reckon he got for that?
I don't know. What do you reckon? I mean, you know.
Look at Drew. He's furious that he wasn't involved.
Well, if it was for a couple of hours,
about an hour,
it's crown paying.
He was there early.
Crown pay good dollars.
Yeah,
probably pay overs because it got so much. Yeah. He might have been. I don't know. Might have been a 1,500, two grand sort of.
Well, anyway, I must give it to him. He was very good for chatting to us. And,
that's why he was good.
Yeah.
Your dollar signs rolling through his eyes.
What did you say, 1,500, 2 grand?
Yeah, I think I could be way off.
What
he could have done it.
Could be more.
He could have done it out of the goodness of his heart.
What if I told you got 5 for it?
No,
I just wanted to see your face. I've got no idea. Yeah. Drew hates it when other blokes get the big cash.
I know where my place is in all this. It's a big week for.
Now, it's a big week for people who use words.
Oh, here we go.
Well, that's probably
after,
a lot of us.
After the fiasco, the disgrace that was the Bolts at ANZ Stadium, the AFL and several other parties use the term not acceptable. Mm-hmm. When it's after the fact, I do not understand how that is. It's already been accepted. If it was not acceptable, it wouldn't have happened. So football clubs love to come out after a bad loss and say, well, that's not acceptable. It's already happened. If you didn't accept it, it's too late to make a choice whether you accept it or not. So I appreciate what people are trying to say.
So what should they use? I used it earlier in the show and you ripped me to shreds. What should we say?
Well, you shouldn't say that.
Right. What's the alternative then to convey the message
you could
eloquently to the public?
You could speak in what I like to call non-weasel words, Matt. In the sense, you could speak and say something that makes sense. Like put your hand up and say, we made a terrible blue. Mm. We have to fix this. In the future. Yep. This is what we're going to do. Saying it's not acceptable doesn't make any sense at all because it's already happened.
So you have to have no choice but to accept it.
You accepted it when you decided not to check the area properly.
Yeah. Mm. But I'm talking...
That's like saying it wasn't deliberate. Well, what's it matter?
Yeah.
It happened.
Well, it wasn't deliberate. Mm. That's accurate.
Oh, some would say that in this case...
They were put there. The bolts.
They were covered up by a chair.
Yeah, they didn't appear for that game. I mean, they've been there a long time. They put a chair over it in the previous game.
Mm.
So not just the AFL and not just those that use those weasel words in the press releases this week.
Weasel words.
Football clubs who use them as well after big losses, that was not acceptable. It's too late.
Very good.
Righto.
Well, glad you got that off your chest. Mm. Big week for Stevie J. He nearly ended up a Giant. He's playing against the Giants this week.
You call us out for what? He nearly ended up a Giant?
Well, I suppose if your auntie had whiskers, she'd be your uncle sort of stuff. But the GWS Giants...
in Ballarat.
They approached him quite confidently. He received 3 Brownlow votes last year when these sides met. Big game for Stevie J.
He's never going to go.
Well, he didn't go, did he? So, no.
I just found that interesting. The non-journo in the room was putting a mail on something.
Oh, first time. Learned from the best.
It's a big week for Paddy Ryder playing against his old club. He says he's nervous about it. Good luck to you, Paddy.
Now, just a couple of others that came across my desk this week that I want to get out there. Matty, first of all, Drew, if you go back and have a look at Monday's footy feed, you'll notice that Matt Thompson presented with a bit of cut on his lip, bit of a cut on his top lip.
Oh, a coleslaw?
No.
Oh.
Like somebody put
a herpes virus?
No, Drew, no. Right. Oh. Somebody put it to me. Now, I don't know if this is accurate or not. Matt, you don't need to answer because it's best that you don't.
Does his Mrs. T have braces or something?
No,
like that?
But they are cohabitating. Now, it was put to me that maybe in a flurry of activity, Matty got a cut lip. Passioned overwhelmed. Now, the other one, we've kept a close eye on our man Mirrors with his rock star girlfriend Sade throughout the year. We know she's put the clamps on.
Yeah.
I was made aware this week that Mirrors has had to stop drinking coffee because he can no longer afford it.
Because he no longer can afford it.
That's my understanding.
And we get $2 coffees here.
Yep.
Really?
And he's that's how coffee. Bad it's got.
Is that something?
He hasn't been able to socialise with us all this year, and now it's come to the coffee. So
you probably need a little bit of a nap during the day then if you can't.
Well, it's
have
interesting
your
that you say that, Drew, but our bosses listen to this, so I won't mention that the lack of
is
caffeine in his system.
Is there a secret spot in AFL media where people go to sleep or to bludge?
Yeah.
Actually, we've got a couch in the newsroom now too. That was Cal Toomey's good work. Got the couch brought in.
Oh, this is a fascinating way to end.
Thanks so much for your company. There's lots going on for the rest of the week on AFL.com.au and the AFL Live official app, so make sure you keep clicking back for more.
Now, who's going to chair off Boomer? Has that been decided?
No.
You'll be one of them?
Possibly.
You've chaired him off in all the others. Yeah,
you don't have a meeting, do you, to decide?
You don't, but it's usually the guys who have played the longest with him who are the closest. So.
Actually, knowing the Kangaroos and the way you operate, somebody haven't put out a fan vote.
Really? Or do we vote on everything?
No, it's just very, very engaging with your fans.
We are engaging.
Yeah. All right. Talk to you soon. Enjoy the footy.